Good evening. Welcome to the Collected Edition, a comic book podcast where we discuss the horrible and the frightening runs and story arcs throughout the history of comics. I am Ghoul Master Ka, your guide through the vile and dark halls. And joining me on this journey is the Dark Lord himself, Brian Reese. Hello and welcome to the Halloween edition of the Collected Edition that will go out on Halloween, hell or high water.
Hopefully hell.
Today on the program, we will be discussing Afterlife with Archie, a zombie Archie comic, which should be interesting to talk about. Oh, hello, Brian. You never really said hello.
Oh, hello. Well, I did my hilarious laugh ending in a coughing fit, but you know, we had that.
Yes.
I actually was a theater major once. You wouldn't be able to tell.
Oh, everyone can tell. You're always acting up.
Everything is very performative on my part.
So anyway, happy Halloween, everybody. Enjoy your candy and your dressing up and all that stuff. So today we're going to do our annual horror comic chosen by me. It's my thing.
You're the best one to do this. Even if it's my turn, I always feel like it should be you making the choice.
Thank you very
I know
much.
I know that's very slackerly of me, but at the same time, this is your wheelhouse.
It's the genre that I enjoy. So anyway, before we get into the horror that is Archie, let's talk about, well, first of all, last time we talked about the first few episodes of Agatha All Along and how much we have been enjoying it.
Yes.
Since then, so time of this recording, the last two episodes haven't aired yet. That's going to air later in this week. Episode 7 did drop last week. And I have to say, Brian, that is easily one of the best pieces of television I have seen in ages.
Yeah. It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah. And just so everyone knows, it's the Patti LuPone episode, the Patti LuPone tarot episode. It's just brilliantly written. It's brilliantly acted. It's brilliantly constructed, like flipping through time and all the little seeds that they've planted so far in the series.
Sculptures and everything that comes together. I mean, this is filmmaking. This is well done filmmaking. And we're both film guys. We don't, people don't necessarily know that so much, but we're both kind of film addicts too. And I call this film because this is film. I know it's a TV show, but some TV shows are film.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's very cinematic, as they say. But no, just everything about it, the structure of this episode is just brilliant. There's so many little things, a testament to how it's, and again, spoilers if you haven't seen it, everybody, but at the end, because they're all dressed up as famous witches in this.
Which is great. Yeah, I mean, well done in so many ways.
But Patti LuPone is dressed as Glenda the Good Witch. And at the end, as everybody's leaving, it's kind of like the end of The Wizard of Oz, where the teen, Billy, is the scarecrow, and she gives his spell book back. She gives him a brain. She tells... It's just so well done. I'm not going to go into detail, but it's just so good.
Yeah,
it's one of those things where I watched it and just went, "Holy cow, that's amazing!"
And there's a reveal that's even better than the teenager is Billy Maximoff,
which
everybody saw coming from a mile away.
Yeah, and which wasn't really a mystery. It was telegraphed quite quite easily. And here's the thing, not every TV, we've been so J.J. Abrams, we've been J.J. Abrams, so everything has to be a mystery box these days. It doesn't have to be. It's not a mystery, it's not a twist. You're given information and then you figure it out. Anyway.
They don't drag it out.
Exactly. Yeah, not everything is a twist. Sometimes it's just information that's been given to you.
And it can be a twist, but it's not a twist you have to wait forever for, and then you're suddenly like, oh no, this changes everything.
Exactly. It doesn't have to be M. Night
I've been
Shyamalan.
Watching Grotesquery.
I haven't started that yet.
And I'm not giving anything away. I'm watching it because, well, Nishi Nash is great in everything. So I've been watching that. I'm only bringing that out to say that there's twists that you had to wait a long time for. And then some of it doesn't make sense because it's a Ryan Murphy show. So, of course, everything falls apart by the end of any season. Yeah, some of that was annoying. Whereas with Agatha All Along, it's like you are brought through it, you can guess it, and maybe they give it away before that, but you are part of the journey. The twist isn't done to just mess with you. And so they're not really twists so much as they make sense.
Yeah, it's more of a misdirection.
Right.
Now you throw a little red herring out there just to keep you just to yeah, you know, just to get you thinking a little bit. We all knew it was Billy. It was
Right.
pretty obvious. And so the previous one, which is the Billy Maximoff episode, so the way the Maximoff twins come back in the comics is incredibly convoluted. It has to do with Mephisto and the shards of their soul get it's crazy complicated. And what they did was his soul was released from the hex and it went into a boy's body who was pretty much the same age and died. Look how easy that was. I love the fact that they're taking things from the comics, but again, they're not beholden to the continuity of the comics. They're just taking the ideas and crafting something new. And I like
Right.
that. I like what they're doing. Anyway, this is pretty good. This has been a pretty good show so far. Maybe it's going to fall apart in the last two episodes.
Yeah, who knows? But it just we've said this before, like in the last time we talked about this, but Patti LuPone, I mean, this was an absolute showcase for her.
Tour de force.
This show is just really well done, and it's based on other shows I'm watching. Well done and good on you, Marvel, for allowing this to happen.
There's a lot of people saying, you know, is Marvel back? That's always the headline. Is Marvel back now? And they never really went away. They just sort of had to, you know, there was this huge pandemic thing that
Yeah.
screwed everything up, and release schedules were screwed up, and writing was screwed up, and then there was a strike. So I'm not really saying like Marvel lost it. It just sort of there was a lot of external factors that went into it went into filmmaking and TV the last few years. And now it seems like they're staggering the release schedule and taking more time to just to craft a better story and a better show. I like comic book stuff. Even when it's bad, it's still pretty good.
Yeah, sometimes.
Sometimes. The next thing we want to talk about, which is Halloween related or horror adjacent, let's say, is the fact that Vertigo Comics is coming back.
Hooray!
Hooray! It's only a virtual imprint, I believe. Or are they going to do physical copies as well?
I think they're doing physical, what I had read. Now, I mean, information is changing. This is relatively recent. This comes out of New York Comic Con last weekend. Although certain sites have been reporting that this is going to happen for a little while now, but yeah, I mean they're bringing so they're changing their dress trade or their trade I'm sorry dress trade trade dress. A lot of Black Label stuff is going to now be the non-superhero Black Label stuff. I think is going to now be the trade dress is going to have Vertigo attached, and I think this is the Sandman Presents stuff.
And
So.
Sandman deserves to be back on Vertigo.
Sandman should have always been Vertigo, dumping, all the Sandman Presents stuff as Black Label, just and especially the recent Hellblazer run, which, wow, we'll talk
Yes.
about that at the end of the year, because that's going to show up at least one of our best of lists.
Yeah, and it's and the they're gonna launch it with a so I don't know if you've read Nice House by the Lake by James Tynion.
I have not.
Okay, it was one of my picks for best comics of the year. I don't know if it was last year or the year before, but it's a really good story. Well, he's going to do a sequel to that called Nice House by the Sea.
Right.
And that's going to be the new premier title to launch on Vertigo
Yeah.
as it comes back.
I think there are. Oh, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I just want to point out to listeners that this is the another ad edition of our trilogy, the final edition of our trilogy, because we talked about
Or giving
Vertigo when
away.
it went away. Then we had a discussion about should it come back, and now here we are, full circle. Vertigo's back.
There are a lot of questions. Is this just going to be a James Tynion vanity label now?
No.
There is questions about is this still going to be creator owned
Now that
in the
is a
way that Vertigo used to be? Who is going to be the editor? I mean, they're not, Karen Berger isn't coming back.
No.
Is it Vertigo without Karen Berger? That's a deeper question. Who is going to be writing for it? What are the parameters? Is it just going to be a very, very generic, let's just slap Vertigo on horror stuff, hence our Halloween portion of the discussion? Because Vertigo was very strongly horror.
Well, yeah. I mean, there was other stuff too,
Sandman
but
technically
yeah, def.
technically is a horror comic. Swamp Thing was technically a horror comic. Hellblazer,
Hellblazer.
much a horror comic.
Yeah.
Invisibles, and you had like a lot of the Grant Morrison stuff that probably wouldn't count as horror, but it was like, again, Vertigo is Image before Image changed into a more creator-owned, freewheeling imprint as opposed to its original. So, I mean, Image kind of took over for what Vertigo was. We've
Exactly.
talked about this before too. So is this, because this is a big giant corporate-y entity, will they allow the same freedom of creative control that had been allowed back in the 90s, early 2000s? Would we get another Scalped out of this? Would we get another Invisibles out of this?
That remains to
It's
be
hard to
seen.
tell.
Is this just Black Label called Vertigo now? So, and if that's the case,
DC is doing some really interesting things right now. Let's be honest. Like, their slate of upcoming comics is pretty interesting.
yeah, they're trying new things.
Will that transfer to actually interesting versus the concept being interesting? We'll see.
It's the question you raised before. It's not, I don't see this as being a James Tynion vanity project, you know. I don't see that at all. But the real question would be, will the creators have ownership like they could in Vertigo of old? Or is this going to be, like I said, Black Label, where DC owns everything, but you get to do some projects you probably wouldn't have gotten to do on, you know, mainstream DC titles?
Who's going to be writing these things? Who are the artists? What is the creative control? What is the what's the plan for Vertigo? Is it and the other question, which is horrible to say, who the hell cares?
I do.
Yeah, well, I do too, because I have a nostalgic attachment. I have an entire digital folder with hundreds of Vertigo titles, like all the miniseries, all of the, wow. I mean, the sheer breadth of what they put out, successful or not, well selling or not, is kind of amazing. Are they looking to recreate that, or are they just looking to use it as a generic branding that may appeal to you and I?
We'll see. For me in particular, I mean, yes, I have a nostalgic attachment to Vertigo. However, Vertigo was known for horror and fantasy leaning things, which is my they're my genres, you know. Fantasy, horror, sci-fi, that's what I gravitate to.
And
And
horror was such a massive, massive part of Vertigo.
right. So if they stick with their traditional publishing model, as far as, you know, selfishly for me, I get to have what I like. So with a branding that I like. So it could be a win-win in my opinion. But no, all of your concerns are valid. What's this going to be?
Excited. Don't get me wrong. I'm always happy to see a Vertigo logo on a comic.
By the way, if you Google Vertigo returning, you get a lot of medical stuff saying you should see a doctor. You need to Google Vertigo comics returning.
Well, but some of that's appropriate too. Sometimes after reading some certain Vertigo titles, I did feel like I needed to seek professional help.
Anyway, I'm excited about it. We'll see how it plays out. But we've been saying for the longest time, just bring it back. And they did. So.
Bring it back as the proper branding for the comics that were part of Vertigo as opposed to the Black Label. And if that's all they do, if they just slap on the Vertigo on the Swamp, on the classic Vertigo runs for trade dress, I'm partly okay with that.
Yeah.
Because Sandman should never have been labeled Black Label.
Yeah, so is it a cynical cash grab? I don't know. Maybe, but hopefully it'll be something more because there seems to be, at least the people that they're mentioning seem to have a respect and a love of the original Vertigo.
Right. And I think some of the younger creators that are out there, like James Tynion and whatever, grew up with Vertigo. So there's a love for that.
Right. And there's a personal ownership in it that they want it to succeed. Hopefully that will be the case, and we get lots and lots of good horror stuff in the future.
Or challenging comics that are outside the mainstream that aren't necessarily horror, because Vertigo is a lot of other things too.
Yeah, but the important part is horror.
For you, for some of us, again, like I'm going back to Scalped, which has some problematic aspects, but at the same time, that wasn't a horror comic. Preacher really wasn't a horror comic.
If you want to hear about Scalped, you can go back to, I think it's issue five or issue episode 5 or 6,
Oh,
very,
that we
very, very early on that we covered on this particular program.
Right. But these were stories that nobody else could tell on any other platform because Image wasn't Image at that point, or what we think of, and Boom hadn't started, and Oni and some of these other places hadn't really started investigating this type of storytelling.
Early 90s, I mean, for someone, and I was in college in the early 90s, Vertigo was amazing. It was something I had, the comics coming out on Vertigo were just a godsend. They were just so different. Like you said, there was nothing like it in publishing at the time. And it was just, I loved every moment of it. You know, every time a new title was announced, it was great.
Every Vertigo title was a must-buy for me.
Exactly.
Every single one.
Yes. And this was in
Oh,
my snobby comic book man in his 20s kind of era.
yeah.
So Vertigo fit right into that.
So we'll see what they do with it. I think it's good news that it's coming back. I'm, let's say, cautiously optimistic.
I'm just going to go full optimistic and hopefully I'm not disappointed.
All
I'm all in, as DC says.
right.
I'm
All in.
absolutely all in.
Holding the line at 299.
Okay. So speaking of horror, let's take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about Archie Comics and some scary stuff.
And we're back. Paul, for our very special Halloween episode, you have made a recommendation and you recommended Afterlife with Archie. Would you like to tell us about this?
Indeed. A story about zombies be wholesome? Can a story about animated corpses ripping bodies to shreds be innocent and sweet? It can, if you have 70 plus years to build on. Archie Comics have been around for a long time, and they've remained relatively unchanged, at least in aesthetic and attitude, all that time. If you'd like to learn more about this, you can listen to episode 60 of this very program. But suffice to say, the Archie Comics general vibe is that of theme park Americana. It's an imagined folksiness of an America that never really existed, and yet still holds a certain charm and nostalgia. It's the secret to their enduring popularity. And while that OG Archie mission statement is still around, it was decided that as society moved into the 21st century, perhaps it was time to diversify, to modernize the franchise, and to see if something new and different could be done with the characters and concepts. As it turns out, the Archie aesthetic works really well in other genres, from Melrose Place type teen melodramas, to solving mysteries, to fighting aliens, to escaping a horde of zombies. And in 2013, Afterlife with Archie and Archie Horror in general was born. Written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa and drawn by Francesco Francavilla, it takes the familiar characters of Archie and places them smack dab into a horror story. Oh, there have been spooky and supernatural stories in Archie before, especially with Sabrina the Teenage Witch, but these have always been kid-friendly and cartoonish. Afterlife with Archie is decidedly not kid-friendly. Now, as a zombie story, there's nothing particularly groundbreaking here. A zombie outbreak occurs. It quickly spreads throughout the population. A group of survivors gather together to survive while trying to overcome their personal differences and inner turmoil. Pretty standard stuff for the subgenre. The unique difference here is, of course, who the horror is happening to. The 1950s-esque veneer of Archie's comics, combined with its soap opera teen drama, provides an extra punch to the horror. We're already familiar with these characters, either from actually reading the comics or through pop culture osmosis. We know they're just wacky, fun-loving kids out for harmless hijinks. The only thing they really care about is getting a date for prom and having a malted at the soda shop. So when violence is perpetrated against them, it seems much more horrific. And the silly relationship drama that has been so much part of Archie since its inception, the will they, won't they, the who likes who stuff, becomes so much more amplified. It seems simultaneously petty and insignificant and the most important thing in the world. There might not be another time to get that first kiss. There may never be a happily ever after. Aguirre Sarcasa and Frank Avila play with that long history, our familiarity with the characters to its fullest extent. They know exactly which heartstrings to pull, or rip out and eat, as the case may be. They turn what in lesser hands could be a very formulaic story into something earnest and sincere, and, dare I say, wholesome. Brian, what did you think of Afterlife with Archie?
Well, it's fun, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when this was happening, and I wasn't following too closely Archie Comics at that time. I love Archie Comics. I still will. If there's an Archie Digest out there in the world in a physical copy, I might pick it up. So this was based off of a variant.
Right. It was just a one-off variant cover.
Who is one of my favorite artists out there, along with Fournier's and some others, and Samney, who Fournier's, Samney, Francovia, they do these great retro, their art has a really interesting retro feel to it.
Yeah, it seems both modern and nostalgic at the same time.
Right. Yeah, so there was, the history behind this was that Francovia did like a horror variant for a generic Archie comic.
Yeah, Aguirre Sacasa just said, so why isn't this
a good idea?
I know.
Like, how fun would it be to put Archie in a zombie apocalypse? Wow. I mean, that's great.
And so much spun off of this as well. I mean, there was a Sabrina miniseries that came out, and a Jughead is a werewolf and vampires.
Archie actually is continuing this idea. Especially during Halloween, you get some Archie specials that are more horror-oriented. Yeah. And of course, we eventually had the Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Was it Netflix? Whatever the...
Yeah, it was a Netflix series. Yeah.
Right. They took this and ran with it, and they've run with it for a while. And I think they're still, even though they haven't finished the series, Archie Afterlife with Archie series, we're still waiting for the last two issues 10 years later.
We should hold a contest to see which will come out first, Afterlife with Archie or Black Monday Murders.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Which one will be completed first?
You know, I mean, the fact that the company said okay.
Yeah, well, I think a lot of it had to do with Archie's doing fine, but, you know, it's been 70 years, so maybe start playing with this a little bit. And it's not just the horror stuff. The horror stuff is great. I love it.
But it's the idea of diversifying the product.
Yeah, because there's an Archie series that's, you know, more realistic and more of a teen romance comic. That works really well. It's had some really good creators on it.
But at some point, you can only have so much goofy, like, ho-ho, Archie can't decide between Veronica and Betty, and Jughead's going to eat like a hamburger.
And gosh, aren't we scared of moose? That kind of thing, yeah.
Right, and those are all fun.
Yeah, it's been able to sustain the company for 70 years. So,
and so somebody just said, okay, go for it. Now, before this happened, Archie had already had a rather game-changing moment with Kevin Keller.
Yes.
Which
is the first openly gay character in Archie.
We had already seen the progression of Archie where it was like, let's change stuff up a little bit. And with this, my God, they went dark.
Yeah, we'll get into it, but there's one issue in particular that I just find so sad. Mm-hmm. You could probably guess which one it is.
Knowing you, yes, I know exactly which issue you're talking about, and we'll get to that.
I'll just say right now, Vegas is a good, good boy.
He's a very good boy. He's a very good boy.
Poor old Vegas. And Hot Dog, too. So props to Hot Dog. Anyway, yeah, it's not, you know, crazy violent or anything.
Oh, it gets a little grotesque at some points. I mean, we get blood and guts.
Well, I know. I don't know. Maybe I'm desensitized because I read this genre a lot. Because there's some things that are just over the top. And this one, I'm like, that's just pretty standard, straightforward fare. But right. In the context of Archie, Yes, it's insanely violent
Right.
and very dark. Also, just real quick, I think everyone should just wear sweaters with giant letters on the front of them.
Oh, I do.
I like it's
Wait,
a good look.
you don't wear a giant sweater with a P on the front?
Well, obviously I do. I'm just saying
Yeah,
that
well, and
everyone
I do
should.
too. You know, I got a big old B sweater that I just wear everywhere I go when I'm out driving in my jalopy.
Yes, exactly. Well, that's real quick about the aesthetic of this. It's very out of time, because obviously, like they're all driving hot rods and they look like they're from the 1950s, but they all have cell phones,
This is Frank Avia, who I think is a modern master.
Yeah,
Artist.
absolutely. It has a very black and white noir kind of feel with that orange. The coloring is amazing.
Right. And the coloring is very autumnal and very, it's very Halloween. It's very horror oriented.
Yeah, and it also has like a kind of a pseudo sepia tone, so that it feels like
Right.
it's a nostalgic flashback. Cool.
Which I think is a great contrast. So they're showing the nostalgic era Archie with the jalopy and all of these things. But, you know, Frank Avia is manipulating that a little bit. It's really interesting artistically how this is presented.
Yeah, it's sort of it's out of time, It's otherworldly and yet
You can't
still rooted
really,
in a it's a
yeah.
fantasy Americana. It's an America that doesn't really exist, but I don't know how to describe it. It's unreal reality. So should we begin with what the
So let's
story
talk
is?
about the comic, the actual things that happen.
We begin in medias res.
You
We
know,
begin.
you mean in the middle?
Exactly. The story has already begun. Hey, you talked about being a film guy. That's a term we use, my friend. So we have Jughead clutching his little dog, Hot Dog, rushing to the house of Sabrina, the teenage witch, and her two witchy aunts.
Zelda and Hilda.
Yes.
I get that right, Zelda and Hilda.
Sure. Yes, they are. So Hot Dog has been hit by a car, and a distraught Jughead is begging Sabrina, can you do something to help him? Well, she can't because
Legally.
legally, she can't
Which
bring.
legally?
Yeah, witch legally. So they're not allowed. It's forbidden to resurrect the dead.
Necromancy is a off the table.
But Sabrina, feeling really bad for Jughead, who's incredibly distraught.
Because Jughead brought up Salem. He essentially is like, wouldn't you do the same for Salem?
Yeah, Salem the cat, by the way, not Salem the place.
So, I mean, Hot Dog is Jughead is not a witch, but at the end of the day, Hot Dog is Jughead's familiar for 70 years.
Yeah, it's a pretty good run for a dog, by the
Right.
way.
And so, of course, Jughead brings up Sabrina's familiar, Salem. You do the same. Wouldn't you do this for Salem, her familiar? And so Sabrina has SADS.
And so she decides to break the rules to resurrect Hot Dog, which she does. They do
Using
a little
necromancy.
using necromancy, to which Sabrina is chastised by her aunts. And it really, they look pretty darn scary in this.
Yeah, we see the real Hilda and Zelda.
Yeah, they look like sort of skull corpses things, and they look pretty darn scary. And she is punished, and that's the last we see of Sabrina. She is punished and
Then sent
put
for
in witch prison, basically.
what? Right, she's put in witch prison, but this is important to the comic, right? Because she's off the table.
Exactly.
Sabrina is taken off the table and she's sent away. The one person who could probably fix all this is banished, which may or may not involve Cthulhu.
That's for another story. Let's not get there.
Another unfinished part of the story.
So, skip to Riverdale High School, where Archie is trying to pick which gal he's going to go to the Halloween dance to.
Waka waka waka.
Yeah. So you have Betty and Veronica. What are they going to wear? It's all very Archie-esque teen drama.
But it is also brought into an adult concept because Betty and Veronica are picking costumes that are not, how should we say,
It's a
they're a little more,
Well, Betty wants to wear a French maid's outfit, bomb
yeah.
chicka
This is where we also see the switch between the sort of yuck, yuck, yuck generic representation of the characters being made into more adult desires, should I say? I don't want to get overly creepy on this because that's a thin line.
Yeah, I mean, that is a thing, but this doesn't go there.
This isn't Riverdale, which just went completely
Batshit
out.
insane. No, this is just, these are high school kids. And yeah, it's not the innocent, fun-loving, we're going to dress
Let's
as
just
ghosts
say
and,
the representation of the kids right now in Riverdale are more active
they're blossoming into a new,
in, yes.
part of their lives. Okay, moving on. So then we find Reggie sitting in his in the locker room, feeling kind of down. We don't and he explain and you, we find out why. By the way, real quick, Reggie's the worst. I think we said this in our previous Archie episode as well. He's just a bad guy, I think.
Well, but you need that because again, like the tropes of Archie require there to be a Reggie, right? You have to have the bad guy. Micah and Betty are the blonde and the dark-haired, right? And so there's all these generic tropes that happen over the past, like you said, 70 years or however long Archie has been around. These are tired concepts that have been repeated over decades.
Exactly. So, so Reggie's the bad boy kind of kid, whereas Archie's the goody-goody who always does the right thing. So we find out that Reggie was the one who was not paying attention, and he's the one who hit Hot Dog.
Well, the idea is he intentionally hit Hot Dog because he was mad.
Did he?
I think further reading going forward a few issues, I think he actually can. There's a moment where it is he had a fight with Moose about Midge, who he loved, and it was he got beat up and he was out and he saw this dog and he decided not to stop.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick up on that. I thought it was just he was distracted because of the fight with Moose.
Well, there was that too, but I think there was a conscious decision by Reggie.
Well, I restate my previous statement. Reggie is the worst.
Yes. But he's having sads. He's having he's he's having sads about it.
Yeah, he feels guilty. He feels
There's
guilty.
a lot of sads. This is a very emo comic. Based on the time that it was put out, it makes sense. There's a lot of emo going on here.
Yeah, you can understand why. Then cut to that night, and we hear a growling, whiny noise, and it's Hot Dog coming back from the dead. So a very excited Jughead goes out to greet his little boy, and he's not right, Brian.
He's not there.
Yeah.
To quote the zombies, he's not there. He's not.
So Hot Dog, he's been pet cemeteried, and he comes back and he bites Jughead on the arm, which infects him, and Jughead's arm gets quite horrifically looks kind of nasty. Looks
Very
like
artistically well represented. It's
it
gory. There's a lot of gore.
looks like he might be infected. He might need someone to see that.
Just a tad.
Jughead's not feeling well. He's not going to go to the Halloween dance that night, but say hi to everybody for me. Flash forward, we're now at the dance, and everybody's having a good old time at the hop, you might say. And then we have Betty and Veronica showing up as sexy nurse and I don't know. Sexy
Vampira.
Batgirl?
It's a
Vampira,
woman.
Vampira. That's who she's
It's
dressed as.
an Archie property.
Oh yeah. Look at you putting the pieces together. I have my one of my favorite things, the two little nerds discussing their favorite horror properties.
Yeah, this is great. It's Chuck and Dilton. There's this running meme of Chuck and Dilton arguing about horror movies. It's pretty fun. It's
Yeah.
inconsequential. It doesn't have anything to do with the comic. It's a humorous side piece.
If you've ever watched people discuss things on social media or YouTube, this is exactly what they say.
Or listen to a podcast about comics.
Exactly. There's all kinds of good stuff. Also, they're not wrong about Dream Warriors and New Nightmare are the only Nightmare on Elm Street sequels worth mentioning.
Dream Warriors was always my favorite.
Yeah, I love Dream Warriors. New Nightmare, better than Scream. Yeah. And the comments are happening. There we go. So anyway, that's just an aside. It's just sort of fun. Then Jughead, full zombified, enters the dance.
Dun, dun,
Dun,
dun.
dun. It's a really great panel of Jughead coming in, and everybody's thinking, "Oh, what a great costume you have."
It should
Now,
be mentioned. I just want to do a quick aside. Again, the characterization here, Weatherby and Grundy have a really nice moment
yeah, they do, actually.
outside of the dance. They're the chaperones, or two of the chaperones, and we get a nice little moment with them, possibly revisiting some romance.
Yeah.
And here comes Jughead, and he just eats them.
Yeah, and it's a shame. They were gonna
I was
We're going to relive their youth a
From
little
a
bit.
narrative standpoint, I mean, it's an offside moment, but it adds to sort of the narrative in a way that's kind of interesting. It's not important, but it also is interesting.
And this gets into the point I was trying to get at in the introduction, which is because we know these characters and they have such a history that when Jughead attacks them, we feel bad. I'm like, oh no. No, they were just about to rekindle their older relationship. They were just about to acknowledge their feelings, and then it was cut short. And this is a very straightforward zombie story. There's nothing groundbreaking here.
We know what's coming.
But it's because of these characters and because we have this familiarity with them that it makes it more, it makes the horror hit harder. So issue two begins with one of the stranger aspects of this comic, where we get Jason and Cheryl Blossom.
Yeah, this
Yeah.
is
They're twins having a bit of a relationship.
So this is a weird transition, right? I mean, she was Cherry Blossom, and I understand why they changed the name. But then when they decided to go more adult, they went flowers in the attic on us.
It's a little strange. It does play into the next upcoming issues past this trade, where you find out something that happened that. Anyway, I found it very, very strange. Although I did like the fact that before they go into the dance, a boy runs out and says, "Don't go in there, they're eating people." And he's dressed like Tom Baker, Doctor Who. I love it. And then we have Betty talking to her father, explaining what happened at the dance in flashback.
Veronica.
I'm sorry, Veronica. Oh, did I say Betty? Look at me getting them backwards. So it was Veronica talking to her dad about what happened at the dance. Jughead arrives and poor old Ethel. Ethel goes up to greet him because she's so excited that he showed up. And
Sexy Ethel, by the way. Not toothy Ethel, sexy Ethel.
you are correct. She is sexy Ethel. Yes, but she gets eaten by Jughead, and it's very sad for Ethel. Excellent panel. It's just a whole page because Ethel is dressed as Snow White, and it's just a bloody hand with a apple being bitten. I just really like this image. I think it's really, really evocative. So everyone at the dance is getting bitten, and they're trying to run home. And of course, now the outbreak is getting all across the town of Riverdale.
And all of our main characters are able to escape.
We have our main characters, Moose and Midge, Betty, Veronica, Archie, Reggie. Who am I missing?
Kevin, Dilton.
Well, they all
Few
kind of
other.
gather together and they escape into the gym.
There's a bunch of stuff that happens. There's also a interlude with Nancy and Ginger, right? So they're at Pop Tate's, and there's some discussion about their relationship. And I have a very large comment about this later, which I don't want to like spoil right now. But at some point, Mr. Andrews, Archie's dad, shows up at Pop Tate's and he's a zombie because he got bitten by hot dog. Or Nancy and Ginger are because they're trying to explain to Pop Tate why they're not at the dance. And so for some reason, Mr. Andrews, as a zombie, knows how to use a doorknob.
Well, here's something, because we see this later towards the end of this arc, where the zombies are still, they're still themselves, sort of, because you see Jughead kind of leading them and telling them where to go, so they still have their faculties about them to a certain extent. It's more animalistic, but they still know how to do stuff, so they're not just shambling corpses. They actually are, they actually know what they're doing. So yes, so our group of survivors fights their way out of the high school. They go to the one place that they know they'll be safe, to Veronica's house, where it's a big old mansion that has supplies to keep them safe.
And Archie specifically said that he has tried to ahem penetrate this fortress to get to Veronica, and so he knows that this is a safe space.
It's very hard to get into. So that's it. That's Veronica saying, I got all these people here. Daddy, let me. Can they stay over for the night? Can we have a sleepover?" I do like how this second issue ends, which is just a little tease of one of these kids is already infected, but which one? It's a very old school comic book tease, I guess.
Yeah, no, and I highlighted that part as well. So there's a bunch of to do involving Ethel being revived from the dead several times. Betty saves Veronica. Veronica saves Betty. There's a whole bunch of kerfuffleage.
Yes. So I mean, and this we get into the this is the human drama, the teen soap opera that's going on here. Because we every one of these characters has relationships with each other, be it romantically or friendships or animosity. Because you know, we've already established that Reggie and Moose are at odds with each other because of Midge.
As it may.
Yeah. So and you know, and this adds to the suspense, I guess you'd say, of this whole thing. You know, it's very, yes, it's a zombie horror story, but it's very character driven.
Right.
And I really like the fact that they keep doing these little flashbacks to kind of flesh out the motivations of each person.
And that kind of builds up over the particularly the last two issues on this is very flashback heavy.
Case in point, issue three begins with Hiram Lodge, Veronica's dad, flashing back to when and why he wanted to come to Riverdale. It's very, very much for selfish reasons.
Right.
Yeah.
But it gives it's all sepia toned. You mentioned sepia earlier, but it is all sepia toned. It's in yellows and golds.
So it's definitely idealized memories.
And there's this great scene where Hermione, Hiram Lodge's wife, is on a train, and Hilda and Zelda, the aunts, encounter her on the train and tell her what baby she's going to have.
There's a good little detail where Hermione says, you know, we're hoping for a boy. One of the two says, no, he is, you're not. And I'm like, oh, that's good. That's a nice little
And then they
point.
tell him it's going to be a girl with dark hair, and I mean they describe Veronica perfectly.
And then we get a little moment of Hiram going into the graveyard, visit Hermione's grave, because Hermione has died. And she, of course, rises from the dead.
But it's a dream sequence.
Yes, it's a dream sequence. And then we get what's the butler's name?
Smithers.
Smithers, that's right.
Smithers.
What do you think, Smithers? But it's just so funny to see him standing there. Hello, sir. He's standing there with an axe. My apologies. Didn't mean to wake
Yeah.
you. Terribly
We get
sorry, sir.
more Smithers later. This issue is re this particular issue is really interesting. I mean, it's like so they're all at Lodge Manor and a whole bunch of stuff happens, but we also have the interlude with Nancy and Ginger. So Nancy and I think this is an important part of this. Nancy and Ginger are lesbians who have a relationship, although one of them is dating Chuck.
Yeah.
So they're not out yet. So there's a long discussion about being out and whatever, which I think is wow, for an Archie comics, this is pretty interesting that they're having these conversations. But at the end of the day, like they escape Pop's diner, it's on fire, like they set it on fire to try to burn it down to do whatever. But then they hop on a motorcycle. And if Archie ever did a lesbian cheerleaders on motorcycles comic, I would be 100% there for. This is my biggest takeaway from that. I want lesbian cheerleaders on motorcycles. This is a trauma film waiting
I
to
was
happen.
just thinking that actually. Yes. Get James Gunn on this immediately. Yes, it's a very important part of this comic.
Well, sort of from character building.
In the meantime, Veronica is trying to get everyone to gather into the heated pool of the lodge because, and I think this is a really good exchange as well. She's trying to get Betty to join them, to join everybody at the pool.
Right.
And there's just sort of Betty doesn't want to, Veronica's trying to get her to, and it's sniping back and forth at each other.
One of my criticisms maybe is that it's a little much, the constant Betty and Veronica thing.
Yes, you are correct. But at the same time, we get this wonderful moment of Veronica admitting that I'm scared shitless and I need you there, please.
Yeah.
She admits that she needs somebody that she can trust, and she does trust Veronica,
Right. It
even though
needs
they have this sniping
end of
back
the
and
world
forth.
pool party.
But she does admit that she's scared and she needs someone. And that's nice. It's a nice little character moment. This comic has this peppered through the entire time. Nice little character moments. Then of course we cut to Moose and Midge kind of hanging out, and we find out that Midge has been scratched. Yeah,
Oh,
but it's fine. It's fine. She doesn't think it's
she
anything.
put some she put some stuff on it.
Yeah, she put some hydrogen peroxide on it. It's perfectly fine. Rub some dirt in it. Walk it off. You'll be fine. In the meantime, Archie decides he has his little penetration hole into the Lodge Manor.
He
And
has a
he.
penetration hole to get in and out.
Of
I'm sorry, Monica's home.
Veronica's pantry.
Yes.
He has full access of Veronica's pantry. So he uses it to get out because he needs to know, are his parents okay? So he escapes. He sees Pops on fire. And then we get the flashback to lesbians on motorcycles, lesbian
Yes.
cheerleaders on motorcycles.
Lesbian cheerleaders on motorcycles. Very important.
Very important. And then we cut back to the kids
I feel
having
like Caliber should have done a comic on this at some point in the. Remember Caliber? It doesn't
Oh,
matter.
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I definitely remember Caliber. Yes.
Yeah.
This would be right up their alley,
Yeah.
right up their pantry. So anyway, back at the pool party, everything's going fine and dandy until Midge and Moose come crashing through a window above into the pool, and they have been zombified.
They're zombies! Because, of course, the scratch wasn't a scratch. Oh, my God. Shock.
Yes. So the kids get out of the pool, and they're able to shut the aluminum cover, the aluminum retractable cover on the pool, which, of course, is that's a thing that everybody has, right?
Well, one assumes that Hiram Lodge has already planned for this because of Archie.
Yes.
Like,
That's
Hiram
probably right.
Lodge set this up specifically to try to trap Archie. So he was actively looking for ways to kill a teenage boy who was interested in his daughter.
Well, you know what? As we all do.
As we all do.
Making us a father, you know.
You know this.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And then we get back to at Archie's home, and he's trying to get into his house to see if everyone's okay when, oh no, hot dog's there. And it's
Rut-row.
Rut-row. Oh, wait, that's Scooby, not hot dog. And then we go to the next issue. So that's the cliffhanger. And the next issue, which is this issue is heartbreaking.
Yeah,
there's
this
so
is
many
the one.
Levels.
I'm reading this and I'm thinking of you because I'm a cat guy. You're a dog guy.
Well, the dog thing for sure, which is just what we're getting to first. But then also just this, the whole thing all the way through. So we start in our sepia-toned flashback out on a farm. Archie is being taken to a farm to pick out his new puppy. So they look at all the puppies and he finally finds one that's just perfect, whom he names Vegas. And they end up playing in the field with a frisbee. And then we get this thing where the mom is crying because look how happy my son is with the puppy. But she remembers when she had her first puppy and that dog eventually died and it broke her heart.
Yeah.
So she knows that sometime, this is good writing, by the way. This is good. This is very good writing where she's saying that, you know, as happy as you are now, you will have your heart broken in the future. And you need to enjoy the good times while you have them because they're not going to last.
Well, that's what we all go through when we take on a pet.
Well, just life in general, I think.
Humans are important too.
Yes, indeed.
But
and then we get a little flashback of Archie and Jughead as kids with their little dogs.
Yes, Vegas and Hot Dog.
Yeah. And then Archie says, Hot Dog is a dumb name for a dog. And I love Jughead's responses. I love hot dogs. So Hot Dog, the infected, we're in present tense. And Hot Dog starts to attack. He's the zombie dog is attacking. And then in comes Vegas jumping in there. Archie Master, he says, or thinks. And the dog thinks back to all the times that they've had together and needing to protect him.
Yes, it's pretty heartbreaking.
Yes.
Anybody who's a cat, whether it be a dog, a hamster, a cat, a parakeet, doesn't matter. Any pet that one is given love to, in whatever way humans are capable of doing that, you see that reflected in the internal voice of Vegas.
Yes. Vegas fights Hot Dog and gives Archie time to escape. And there is one panel which breaks my heart. I'm looking at it right now.
Oh, I know exactly what one you're talking about.
It's just a close-up of Vegas's face with his big sad eyes. And it just says, thank you, love you forever. Oh, God. And so Archie runs off and poor old Vegas.
Fights a Hot Dog. Of course, Vegas gets bit.
Yes. And now we need to take a break so that we can dry our eyes.
Yes.
it's very sad.
Like the whole the internal dialogue, and you haven't even said a lot of the internal dialogue that Vegas does.
Yes.
My God, they just really attempted to rip our hearts to shred here because nobody cares about Mr. Weatherby or Jughead or Ethel, but the internal dialogue of Vegas protecting his master who has loved him and loves his master, it's like a couple pages.
It's
you're
really...
just like your heart breaks with every panel.
And the and the art is it's first of all, it's stunningly good, but it's also just It's horrific because, you know, the dog fight and just that sad eyes looking up at Archie. It's
You run.
horrific and
Hey,
heartbreaking at the same
love
time.
you. Yeah.
Yeah, love you forever.
Yeah.
And he says, now run and live. Damn.
To me, this is to me like it's the most affecting part of the series. Now, there are other great parts about the series, but this is the one where, you know, again, you're the dog guy,
I
you
have him
know.
sitting right beside me as we're recording this.
I remember reading this and I was like, oh, Paul, oh, buddy.
This whole issue is just extremely well done,
Yeah.
start to finish. And now we get into the next heartbreaking part. Archie breaks into his own house, runs upstairs, and finds his mother very cowering and very sad, very much alive and not zombified. But then the dad arrives,
Right.
who
And I'm just like sitting there going, I would protect Molly Ringwald with my life.
is that Molly Ringwald?
I'm sorry. I'm going back to a reference, a Riverdale reference. I can never see Mrs. Andrews without thinking about Molly Ringwald, and I can't see Molly Ringwald without thinking about myself as I was growing up.
We get another interlude with the Blossoms,
Right.
the twins, and something weird's going on with them. But back to the action.
Archie like saves his mom, but he has this, there's this horrible, just awful moment where he beats the living shit out of Zombie Dad.
Well, he has to protect his mother, so he grabs a baseball bat
Yeah.
and smacks Dad over the head with it, who falls down the stairs, but still, you know, he's a zombie. He gets up. Archie, he beats his dad with the baseball bat, but as he's doing it, he's remembering being taken to a baseball game, riding on his shoulders, carrying balloons. And
Yeah.
yeah, and it's just intercut between him hitting, using the bat, and then a memory, then using the bat, then a memory. And it's just heartbreaking. It's devastating. And then there's this wonderful, terrible panel of him just standing over the corpse of his dad with a bloody baseball bat. And it's
Yeah.
beautiful art that is just devastating to look at. I gotta say, Frank Avila, just incredible artwork in this.
Yeah, there's a reason why he's one of my favorite contemporary artists.
Then they have to escape from Vegas, who's now been zombified. And then they get into an old-timey car, because
The
what kind of.
jalopy, it's the famous jalopy. Yes, so Archie has to save his mom, so they hop in to the jalopy. Of course you had to have the jalopy show up at some point, right? And you know, his mom is like, "Well, this run," and you know, of course, we get the flashbacks of his dad helping him fix it up, and it just there's a lot of heartbreak in this issue.
So they drive off back to the lodge, and we get an epilogue of Jughead rallying the zombie troops.
And they're marching towards Lodge Manor.
Yes. And then we get the final issue of this particular collected edition, where we get the Smithers backstory.
You know, I mean, Smithers has a relationship with Hermione. It's probably a little, you know, he's a butler. He's like Alfred. He's every butler. He's Jarvis.
Yes, and you get the whole backstory where his father taught him how to be a butler. You're always there, but you're never seen. You see everything, but you're never seen by others.
But he's been commanded to protect
Veronica.
Veronica.
Yeah, we find out that he was the one who helped deliver Veronica because Hiram wasn't there.
Because Hiram is a Lothario. But it also gives context sometimes in the same way that, you know, why does Smithers hate Archie so much? Not for the same reasons Hiram Lodge does,
Well,
right? I mean,
he's trying to protect her as far as her feelings and being hurt.
Smithers hate Archie because he views Archie as a threat to Veronica becoming what Hermione wanted. So he is protecting Veronica not for Hiram, but he's protecting Veronica for Hermione. And it gives a really different context of his character.
Again, just a page of flashback, and we know so much about this character. He's not just the, you know, stereotypical butler, just always there in the background. He's got a little bit more depth to it. So then we get the zombies are coming,
And
and
there's a whole bunch of like, somehow, some way, Cheryl and Jason have made it to the lodge.
yes.
Nancy and Ginger have made it to the lodge. Suddenly, you know, we have who knows how this all happened. And somehow Archie and his mom made it to the lodge. So we have like six people who suddenly are now at the lodge without any sort of understanding of how they got there or how they knew to go there.
Well, we get the impression that some time has passed and people are just making their way to the closest thing to a fortress that there is in Riverdale, which is the lodge. The lodge lodge. Then we get a ridiculous thing with Reggie, who is, I want to reiterate, the worst, opening up the pool because he wants to see Midge, man.
Well, he's trying to. So Reggie goes to the pool room to try to open up the reinforced aluminum wherever where they have Moose and Midge trapped underneath.
Moose and Squirrel. So he wants to open it up.
And suddenly Dilton.
And suddenly Dilton stops him from doing that because he's the only one with any, he's not, there's no drama going on with Dilton. He's not in a relationship drama. He's just trying to say, dude, what's going on?
Just a nerd.
Yeah, just everybody start acting normal, please. But then down in the pool hall, in the pool room, which has big glass windows, there's a butt ton of zombies out there trying to break in, which they are. Archie tries to hatch a plan to get them out of the lodge and then out of Riverdale.
And he meets resistance.
He does. He
I
meets.
think Sonic even says at some point, Archie, you'll never convince my dad.
So they try to go through the pantry penetration hole, but they find zombies are already getting through.
And who
Yes.
are the zombies?
They're Betty's mom and dad.
They're Betty's mom and dad.
Oh.
So we have sads.
Yes. We're making fun of, we're making light of this, but it actually is kind of sad.
And Veronica at some point is like, oh, Archie's not giving you attention anymore. And Betty's just like, no, I'm sad because those were my parents. And Veronica's like, ooh, ooh, oh, so
Ooh.
sorry. Oh, heavens.
Ooh. Touched a nerve. This story plays on this, the relationships and seeing the people that you love becomes who they're not. And playing on loss. It gets back to that little flashback of, yeah, you're happy with the puppy right now, but that puppy's gonna cause heartbreak. So the plan B that Archie has is to set off all the fireworks in the lodge manor.
Right, because this is referenced earlier that Hiram Lodge is in charge of the fireworks for celebrations. The lodge has lots of fireworks.
Right, so Hermione always wanted to give back to the community, and part of that would be, have some nice celebrations for everybody. And I think this is really well done as well. So they set off the fireworks, and all the zombies, they just instinctively, as if they still remember, they go to watch the fireworks.
Well, this is a trope in all zombie stuff is like you could distract zombies easily by sounds and by noise and visual stimulation.
But it's referenced in the narration that they still have a bit of their humanity left, and they're still they know that seeing these fireworks, oh, we're supposed to go and watch it. So they still remember that this is a thing that we do. I don't know. It's pretty good. Romero's zombie films all do that as well. Like in Day of the Dead, they all the zombies go to the mall, not because they need to be there, but they remember that this is a place they should be.
Well, but that's a cons the Day of the Dead is a great anti-consumerist, being disguised as a horror film. That's a different discussion. Sorry.
Yes, I know, but it's the same concept of the zombies still retain memories of what they're of who they were and what they're supposed to do. They use the distraction to get out of the lodge, to get out of Dodge, and they shuffle out into the forest, and they're trying to get on the road to escape the zombie infestation. And we're done. That's where we leave
Sure.
it.
But off they go, and then we got the next, six issues, which.
Yeah, so the next collection, next few issues take them on what is it's a, basically a road trip that takes them on, but we're not dealing with that one today. Now, sadly, this isn't completed, but this is just really well done.
It is. It's this is fun. The whole idea of this, it could have been done poorly, and I have some issues with it that I didn't bring up because it doesn't matter because this is our Halloween episode. And so I think we're just trying to find a fun horror comic. And this is a good horror comic. There are so many great horror elements to this and visually just perfect.
Yes, absolutely. Looks great.
Like the horror tones and the sort of exaggerated visuals of the horror aspects of it, the coloring, everything about it is so well done. I still can't believe this is an Archie comic, and I can't believe this was allowed to happen.
I see. I think it's great.
Oh no, I agree.
It works so well because it's an Archie comic. And it's the fact that you said like a lot of the tropes and stuff, you know, that's why you have the kids in the beginning talking about the different horror franchises and so forth. So that's the author acknowledging, yeah, I know I'm going to lean heavily on this stuff, but I'm doing it intentionally, lampshading the fact that, yeah, he's going to lean into some of the zombie tropes and some of the tried and
But
true storylines.
that's what you do. I mean, you take the generic tropes and you work out from it that are the expected from the general public, meaning you and I and others. We expect certain things from zombies or zombie films, zombie novels, zombie comics, whatever it is. There are certain things that have to. The Walking Dead even had to do this.
Yeah, of
You
course.
know, what you do outside of the expected is where you get the difference between a generic, presentation that doesn't do anything versus a generic presentation that builds out. And this comic does that.
Absolutely. And it's the fact that you have these Archie characters so that when you have the Betty Veronica, which one will Archie choose kind of a thing, that's kind of a tired trope in Archie comics, but you give it new life by having zombies. So that decision becomes much more vital, it
Yeah.
seems.
And
Yeah.
because it's Archie, it has to be there.
Of
You
course.
can't ignore the Archie, Veronica, Betty triad, but you acknowledge it and then contextualize it.
And that goes with all the other relationships that are throughout this. It's everything is given a new twist. Yeah.
So
Yeah, I just,
this is a
this is.
fun comic. Yeah. I don't know how important it is. I don't, but at the end of the day, I enjoyed the hell out of it.
And it sold incredibly well when it first came out, to the point where Archie horror is now a thing,
Yes.
which I'm happy for. It's wonderful. We get to have Josie and the Pussycats as vampires. That's a good thing. That happens later. But the fact that that exists in the world, it's a great thing.
And that it was allowed to.
I know. I like the fact that the Archie comics has kind of broadened its worldview.
Still hoping lesbian cheerleaders on motorcycles comic. That's never going to happen in my lifetime.
Lesbian cheerleaders on motorcycles. Fans out there, make it happen.
Yes.
So anyway, yeah, this was good. This was fun, and I enjoyed it. And I think everyone, it's worth a read. It's definitely worth a read. It's good.
It's such a good October Halloween comic. And of course, it's set in October. It's set appropriately and visually with its autumnal, which it should be.
Yeah, and it should be said that, you know, there are some
Summer
tropes.
zombies or spring zombies are not as much fun. They should be autumnal zombies.
And it should be said that this there are some horrific things in here, and there's some sad moments, but it's very approachable. If you don't like horror comics, this is you could start with this. It's good. So that's it. Do you have anything more to say?
No, happy Halloween, everybody.
Happy Halloween. But next time on an all-new edition of the Collected Edition, we will be reading something else. What will it be,
Yes, we
Brian?
will.
What will it be, Brian? It's your choice.
I am going out of my comfort zone.
Uh-oh.
Yes. Having been mentioned a few episodes ago that I am attempting to revisit the X-Men. I'm starting to be all in. It's been a good 20 plus years since I've done the X-Men, although I spent most of the 80s and into the very early 90s religiously reading the X-Men. Anybody who, the tens of thousands of followers of us know that I've fallen off on the X-Men, but I've dipped my toe back in. And so I'm starting to revisit the X-Men. And so, what better way to celebrate my return to a franchise than to recommend a comic from said franchise? So, lengthy intro to say our next comic that I'm recommending will be X-Men: The Dark Phoenix Saga.
Damn.
We're
Just
going there. We're going to do this. We're going to do the Dark Phoenix Saga.
the best thing about the Dark Phoenix saga is they did it once and they never had to do it again.
Right, yeah. So once this ended, Phoenix was done, and we never had poor Jean Grey have to revisit Phoenix again.
Nope, never again. No, this is exciting. I don't think I've read this in 20 years or
Yeah,
more.
same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, this will be fun to revisit. Love a Claremont.
My apologies. I don't know why I keep doubling down on John Byrne, but here we are. It's John Byrne again. But the focus is on Chris Claremont on this one, not John Byrne.
He's got some good art in this one as well, so.
Yeah, we should do. I mean, John Byrne is seminal, but we just haven't done a proper X-Men.
And again, we have done X-Men adjacent. Yeah, because we did New Mutants back in the day. That in and of itself is kind of fun because I had picked New Mutants to do when the New Mutants movie was coming out. We did that episode and the movie didn't come out for another 2 years, which was really interesting. And you had said that X-Men adjacent is the new title being released by Marvel.
Right, there'll be another X-Men X adjacent will be another X-Men comic that's going to come out in the next few weeks.
Yes, exegesis.
Exegesis, oh good. I like
Yeah,
that.
all good stuff. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. Happy Halloween. And until next time, by all means, keep reading comics.
And have a spooky day.
Woohoo! You've been listening to The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast. The Collected Edition is a Daddy Elk production. All materials used on the program are copyright their respective copyright holders, and no infringement is intended. If you'd like to give us your feedback, the show can be found online at our website, collectededitionpodcast.com, where comments can be left on individual episodes, or send us an email to comments@collectededitionpodcast.com. The Collected Edition, a comic book podcast, is for entertainment purposes only.